Queensland HIV Foundation originally funded this research, and then when we realised we needed to go north, Queensland Positive People helped to fund some of the interviews that we did up north, so thank you to those people. Again, it's important to be following Chris because he's done... I could just sit down now. He's really presented all of the key things. But to give you, you know, the academic voice, there is a very small but growing literature in this area looking at peer navigation or patient navigation programs more specifically. Much of the work started with patient navigation, but within the HIV space, the focus really is on peer navigation. The research that's been done has demonstrated some improvements, particularly in terms of healthcare, quality of life, social support, experiences of stigma. There's always a lot of focus on adherence and viral suppression. A lot of the research projects that have been done have focused on people particularly, and interesting to follow on from the speaker this morning, people who've been incarcerated, people from culturally and linguistically diverse groups and those experiencing disadvantage. Most of the research that has been evaluated has been run in clinical settings. So again, I highlight that in the context of this talk. And most of the evaluations have been done either in the US or many of our African nations. This is the first evaluation that has been done in Australia because this is the first peer navigation program that has been run in Australia. Okay, so originally when we set out to look at this program, and this is a unique evaluation. Most evaluations, we go in, we do the work, we look at the program, we get out. Within the context of this and within the context of working with QPP, this has been a longitudinal evaluation, which is very much in the model of the research that we do. So our initial aims were to look at the mechanisms through which peer navigation can provide support and assistance in co-constructing linkages for care for recently diagnosed people and those who are engaged in care. And as Chris has already talked about, the QPP program is unique. It is statewide. It draws on people from a range of different backgrounds. It is a brief intervention model, and that's a really important point to make. The 10-plus, now 11, education models have been used, but it's really about people working in place in community. That is such a unique aspect to this program. So when we started, as I said, we started with the traditional sort of evaluation model. We were going to do a client survey. We started with baseline, looking at social support, experiences of stigma, engagement with health services, preparedness to initiate treatment. We ran a baseline survey. We were to do an 8-week follow-up in 6 months. Our response rate was horrifying. And I'll refer to that in a moment. But one of the issues that we know specifically within this, providing a de-identified survey online is, I would say, a very dehumanising experience, particularly within the context of what people are going through. So importantly to us and the research that we do, phase two was the focus on in-depth interviews. We've done 20 interviews with participants across the state, from Brisbane all the way through to Cairns. We've also interviewed all of the peer navigators, importantly peer navigators that are no longer working with the program, as well as peer navigators who are in the program and the new treatment facilitators Chris has mentioned. And we managed to gain access to six healthcare practitioners, six S100 prescribers who have been involved in the program in some way, shape or form. So for those of you who are interested in the survey results, we do have a poster upstairs that talks about some of the results that have come from this and the important findings for people. But in the context of what I'm talking about today, we really want to look at the experiences of all stakeholders, because everybody who has contributed to and has been part of this research, it's important to hear their voices. Those who've been engaged with the program, to look at how they navigate and negotiate roles and relationships to support PLHIV. What I'm going to do now is not something that we generally do within the context of our research. Our research is always focused on the lived experience of HIV and talks to, when we spend a lot of time, for those of you who may know the research that we're involved in, the Living Positive Queensland study, the T2 study, which looks at people who've been recently diagnosed or living long-term, interviewing those people over a longer period of time. As I mentioned, though, within the context of this study, we have interviewed clinicians. So I'm starting with that voice when I present these findings, particularly because we know within the context of delivering HIV care in Australia at the moment, more diagnoses are happening in community, more diagnoses are happening with GPs who are not experts and specialists in HIV care. And those working in primary care talk to us and know of the resource limitations they have, the health systems barriers they face, the time limitations. We talk to clients and people living with HIV all the time who talk about, yes, I've got a clinician, I go and see them, and they come back in 6 months. Okay. So always a little bit odd to think about. But we will start with that voice when I start to present and talk about the relationships that have happened and go on between our peer navigators, our clients and our clinicians. So within that context, one of the things that the S100 prescribers talk about and identify very, very clearly within the context of peer navigation is the way in which the peer navigators can normalise the experience, can actually present someone who has an experience and a knowledge that they don't have. And they're very, very cognizant of that. As this GP said, I think it's odd that I can't give, I think that the thing that's added, the thing that I can't give them because I don't have HIV. There's a very clear acknowledgement of that. The peer navigators obviously acknowledge that and are describe the very privileged experience that they have in able to being working as a peer navigator and supporting someone to navigate their recent, particularly their recent diagnosis. As this comment from one of our peer navigators said, I feel like this role has great power to help people. That's beautiful. This is obviously strongly acknowledged by the clients or the PLHIV who have been recently diagnosed and linked in with the peer navigation program. They talk about, it was like there's someone else who's been infected with HIV, what do they look like? And they were quite concerned, and after and following the meeting, you seem to be doing okay, so maybe I will be okay as well. So it's that recognition and understanding of the normalising of that, the experience of HIV. In terms of translation, we know that the moment that you are diagnosed in talking to people, people talk about the profound silence that comes from a diagnosis. And our clinicians are very cognizant of that. They're very cognizant that in the early stages, patients hear very little. Once words are spoken, there's very little that follows. We've spoken to amazing GPs who've told their patients to come back the next day. I've given you a diagnosis, please come back, promise me that you'll be here, promise me you'll come back, and we'll talk tomorrow. The peer navigators very much see and understand that translation role. They talk about going to clinical appointments with their clients. They talk about walking outside, asking permission, do you want me to talk to the clinician, not to talk to the clinician. They follow what the client wants them to do, and then they talk about reiterating and talking through a language, everyday language, that people will engage with. And as one of our clients said, it was pretty much to me the same thing. Apparently there's a pill that stops anything happening. And the guy's like, yes, you can have the confidence that that's correct because I couldn't get in my head. I don't know. I wasn't willing to believe. I was just too ignorant or wasn't kept in the loop. So it is really very much that translational role that provides support. Coming very much to the points that Chris has made about the complexity of the experiences and complexity of lives that many of our people living with HIV have described within the context of this study, is the way in which they need to be able to access support that goes beyond the clinical care, beyond clinical care, to address, and I think it was Daryl who said this morning, that HIV is a profoundly social condition. So it's about recognising that beyond the clinic there is needed support for a whole range of different circumstances. Chris has already presented for you this really important quote from one of the clinicians that talked about a client who had disappeared. They had no way of contacting, no way of engaging, but through the peer navigation program they were actually able to check in and make sure that person was okay. Many of the peer navigators that we spoke to talked about the complex lives that their clients were experiencing. They talked about tapping into and linking them in with housing services and employment services and a range of services that could provide and facilitate that support. And many of the people who we spoke to, again, also acknowledged the complexity of their lives and the challenges that they were facing in a whole range of different ways. In line with this, in line with the understanding of complexity, and I know this, as Chris has mentioned in that excellent final question, the complexity of delivering a service that is a throughput model, that is trying to provide people with care and support that goes beyond that 8-week period, there is a recognition and a need for flexibility. Most importantly, the clinicians acknowledge that the peer navigation program provides that flexibility. As we said before, that extension of the arm of care, but it is actually a recognition and an acknowledgement of the socially complex nature of HIV and the need to be that flexible in care. In terms of the same perspective or that same understanding comes from our peer navigators. So there's the social health literacy side, there's the peer support side, there's the social aspect to it, all of it encapsulated in that very short and precise quote. Coming back to our clients, it's pretty much to get me back on track, to help things, help organise things, and just a point of contact if I needed anything. I was told that the peer navigator was a certain short period, but it's variable depending on what your situation is, and knowing that that extension can be there if the person needs it. So in that very, very brief run through 2 years of research, some key points of discussion for consideration that need to be acknowledged within this. Peer navigation and the peer navigation program that's been run by QPP provides an important extension of care into the community to ensure people aren't falling through the clinical gaps in that 6-month timeframe between clinical appointments. It's acknowledging, as Chris has said, that experience of diagnosis is distinct. Peer navigators have to have the flexibility of their roles, the flexibility of their knowledge and of their support to be able to help people who are managing complex issues. And that relationship, we see very much this is a relational program between people living with HIV, the peer navigators and the clinicians, to sustain and ensure referral pathways from clinic to community are built and addressed all aspects of HIV care. Thank you.